Welcome to Wild Tater. I'm Charles Hathaway. I am not what one might consider an expert on the topic of sustainable agriculture and so forth, but I also feel like it's not fair to expect expert from anyone in this field, for the simple reason that there's so much that we don't know, and there's a great deal that we have learned and discovered, and we always share according to the best of our knowledge, and we're constantly revamping and rethinking what we know and what we learn. And that's as it should be. So if there's anything that I share, for example, that you know not to be fully accurate, please tell me. I'm learning. We're learning together. Not just you and me, but as a human race, we're learning. We find these patterns that we're like, whoa, it looks like when we use water, plants grow better, and things like that. And then you start getting into hydroponics, and you start getting into other forms of alternative gardening methods, and you find, well, maybe it's not what we thought it was. And a lot of times there's chemical exchanges that yes, water fulfills that, but it's not the water that's doing it, or whatever it is. Okay, we're constantly learning as a society. You might say there is no expert in this field, and yet there's still the question of, tell me of your exploration, tell me of your adventures in this field, because everybody's going to be a quote-unquote expert at what they study and what they learn and what they try and what they do. Everybody is. And if it's not in sustainable gardening, it may be in basketry, it may be in some other thing, but that thing to which you have devoted your exploration, that thing that you have devoted your time and effort and learning to, you have something to offer in that thing. And if you don't offer it, then the rest of us are going to miss out. That's just all there is to it. And I don't care if there are 10 people that you know of that are far more expert than you are in your field. They are not exploring where you are. You may be trying exactly the same things that they're doing, but there is always a difference between what they're doing and what you're doing. And because of that, your input is valuable. Your lessons, the things that you have gathered, is not only valuable but mandatory to the whole of the knowledge base that we as humans are building up. And with every little data point, every single little thing, we gain more insight. I mean, think of it this way. Let's say you are trying to grow radishes, okay, among other things. And your greenhouse is not very effective, but you're trying it. And you plant your radishes, and it gets really hot in this greenhouse, but your radishes are thriving. That seems strange to most gardeners, because when it gets too hot, cold season plants like radishes don't usually do as well. But if yours is thriving in a ridiculously hot situation, then you have found an exception, whatever that be. It may be that your greenhouse has enough, I don't know, humidity to make up for, you know. It may be that that the ground itself is just so fertile that it almost doesn't matter the temperature. You know, I don't know. We don't know what the answer is, why that's doing so well when most people would not be able to do well under those conditions. But that's the point. That's the point, is that for everything that you share, you add a data point. It can be an outlier. It can be something that seems so far off of what everybody understands that it seems like, oh, I better not tell people this because they'll try it and it will fail. But the problem with that is that if we don't have that data point, we don't know why it worked. And if we don't know why it worked, then there is a gap in our knowledge. And if we can fill in that data point, we may not have all the answers. We may not know why that radish worked, but we know that it worked, which tells us it is possible under some circumstances for this to be the case. Now, what are those circumstances? Well, here's what we know about the circumstances where it has successfully worked before. There was a humidity level of X. There was a altitude of X. There was a soil pH of X. Now, each of those data points may or may not be factors in the success of that thing. But now that we have a data point that says, if all of these are in place, it can work, then we can try them individually. We can try them in groups. We can mix and match. And if you did that enough, you might be able to find it out exactly why it worked. Well, when the pH is at X and the humidity level is at X, you can raise the temperature by 30 degrees and it will do fantastically. That is huge, because in a climate where those conditions are the natural conditions, it's no wonder that maybe radishes haven't been there yet, haven't done successfully, because we've always planted them in spring, right after, you know, the first frost has ended or whatever. We know the conditions now that need to be in place for that to work. And if we use those conditions, if we find those conditions in the natural world, you may be able to get radishes to take fully on their own and become established on their own, so that you don't have to plant them anymore. You just harvest them. And speaking of radishes, this is a point that I'd like to make from my own experience. And I think it's not a rare piece of knowledge, but it is a little bit of a lesser known piece of knowledge. And it is simply this: most root vegetables, or most root plants, you know, things, potatoes, carrots, turnips, onions, things where we're eating that ball of root. And yes, we can talk about whether or not those are actually roots or whether they're the base of the stem or what. I don't care. It doesn't matter. That chunk of thing that's under the ground, okay? Most vegetables like that, when you harvest them, you don't have to kill the plant in order to eat it. To which most people would respond, well, but I'm digging out the root. And you're right, you are. And what you need to do at that point is cut off the top of the root. So, you know, that top of the carrot that you don't like to eat, that people don't generally eat because it's kind of that nub where the green starts coming out. That part can be cut off at, I don't know, half inch, something like that, and planted back in the ground. And guess what you'll get? The plant will grow back. And not only will it grow back, but carrots, as with most root type vegetables, is biennial, which means it grows for 2 years, which basically means it'll have a year of growing a big root and big leaves, and then a second year or second season, depending on how things go, or if it's too hot, it might bolt early, whatever, it doesn't matter. It will have a time of growing seed, which means you cut off that carrot top, put it in the ground, and what are you going to get growing back? Not another carrot, but carrot seed. which means you don't have to sacrifice getting seed in order to get your carrot. And so what you'll do is you pull your whole carrot out, you chop off that top. You can plant it back with the greens if you want. Chances are they're going to struggle because you've just uprooted, and you can leave the greens on if you want. They may wilt, they may even die. Or you can cut them off. It really doesn't matter, because what's going to happen is new greens are going to grow, or maybe the greens that you had will survive. It doesn't matter. And it will continue to grow, and you'll find these big long stems growing out of it. Now this may be 2 months after you've planted it, you know, depending on your climate, the time of year, etc. Doesn't matter. Plant it in the ground, and what you'll get is these big, beautiful umbrella flowers that will invite ridiculous numbers of native bees and flies and pollinators of all sorts. They will pollinate it, and you will get carrot seeds growing like crazy. Every one of those little flowers within the umbrella will grow a carrot seed. And they are not the little fleck, soft, silky little seeds that you get at the store. They're burrs. Okay, those little flaky seeds are inside the burr. Now, you don't have to do anything to the burr. Just plant them, okay? But there you go. You don't have to sacrifice your root vegetable in order to carry on its next generation. And to me, that's important in sustainable agriculture, because if you have, you know, say 500 carrots, that's a lot. Let's say you have 500 carrots, and you harvest all those carrots only, then the next year you have no carrots. Maybe a few that came off of little root ends that happened to be lucky enough to survive and be able to grow back. Okay? But you don't have any more. Now, what if you cut off those tops? Now, not all are going to survive, but let's say half of them do. Then you've got all the seed you need for the following year to grow 500 more. In fact, you'll be able to grow 1,500 to 5,000 to 10,000, I don't know, more carrots. And if you can get them, what I would suggest is save some of the seeds, maybe a quarter of the seeds, and then let the rest fall and see if they grow back on their own. Because if they do, then you've probably got an established vegetable that's going to grow back every year. Whether it's the second year of the fruit that was growing last year, or the or seeded plants from the mother of the previous year. It doesn't matter. The point is that you now have an established, sustainable crop. And if you continue to harvest that way by taking it out like you would normally, but then planting the carrot top or onion top or potato top or whatever back in the ground, then it will continue to go to seed, or it will come back the next year and go to seed. Or at least it can. Enough of them will to justify it. It's like planting a new seed. In fact, it's not even like planting a new seed, because it's like skipping the first year of seed, because you're going straight to seed this next year. You're not going to have to pick that again. Now, sometimes, some vegetables, you can pick them again later that same year, and you'll find, oh, look, there's a new carrot on there, or, oh, there's a new potato, or the onion has expanded back out. But that's not usually going to be the case, and that's totally okay, because it will go to seed, those seeds will grow, and you'll have more. So I never think of, or I tend never to eat plants that the harvesting requires killing the plant entirely. If you can save some part of the plant, then you have now made your crop more sustainable. And if you can get them to come back on their own, that's even more sustainable. Now, I just learned this last week, kind of by accident, that this works for even things like sweet potatoes. In fact, it works even more or even better with sweet potatoes, because what happened is I have some sweet potatoes in my house. It's just kind of in my kitchen, and they grow ridiculously well. These beautiful vines that can be eaten, by the way, the green leaves can be eaten in salad. They're delicious. And one of my kids bumped a branch or something, and it cut off, I don't know, it's probably 5 inches off the end of one of these sweet potatoes. And just being the kind of gardener that I am, I just stuck it in water. That's what you do with stuff that breaks off, because, you know, one of many things may happen. Maybe it'll flower and go to seed still. You would think, but it's dead. No, it's not dead. It is extremely stressed, but it's not dead. Any part of a plant that's broken off is not dead unless you microwave it or cook it or something like that. Puree it, perhaps. Even pureeing it doesn't kill it immediately. Each of those cells are still a living thing. Now, maybe the beating to a pulp will, that pureeing does, might kill most of it. But anyway, point being, that when something breaks off, it's not dead. Put it in water, put it in soil, something to give it another chance. And what happened with my sweet potato vine piece is that within a week, I have never seen anything root this fast. Within a week, there were roots growing out of the bottom. Not big ones. Well, I shouldn't say big. Not long ones. They were short, thick, stubby ones. And they were growing. And normally you want it to grow out a little bit of root, but I was like, the pot in the area was kind of vulnerable that it was in. I was like, it's growing, whoa, you know, with the root sticking out. And so I stuck it in another pot. And a week later, that we're in now, it's doing great. It hasn't lost a leaf, which usually when I root stuff, the leaves all fall off, and then they start coming back after a while. They start growing again, new ones. That's what usually happens with rooting stuff. But I'm like, oh my goodness, I now have a sweet potato factory, is what I have. Because my sweet potato can be clipped off every, I don't know, month or so, and grown a new sweet potato. If I'm growing a new sweet potato every month, in 12 months, I have 12 sweet potatoes. And the next year, I have 144 sweet potatoes. Suddenly, I have a sweet potato business. Okay, so the point is, never assume that you have to kill a plant in order to harvest it. In fact, you may be able to get more out of it than you had before. If you're harvesting a sweet potato, for example, you might cut it off every 8 inches, you know, to take the root out, cut the top off, cut a few inches off that, plant that little root nub with you know, a couple inches of green, stick that back in the dirt, and you have your same sweet potato. And then all of the greens above that, cut them off in 8-inch segments, and you will have that many sweet potatoes. Okay? And if it works like other root vegetables, I have not studied it, so I don't know myself for sure, but if it works like other root vegetables, it is very likely to grow new sweet potato bulbs at the bottom. That rhizome, whatever you call it, potato, okay, at the base. And even if it doesn't, those lovely, delicious salad leaves will serve you forever. And I suspect that it will, because that's what... You know, you think of seed potatoes. You know where they get seed potatoes from? They get them from potatoes. You pull out a potato and it's got all these little nubs on the end, which if you were to leave them in the dirt, theoretically should turn into large potatoes, making it so you have this whole mass of you know, 5 potatoes that grew off of the 1 potato or whatever. So, never assume that you have to kill a plant in order to harvest it. Learn the properties of the plants so that you can know, well, what would I have to do to save this one? You know, if you can plant the rest of it back in the ground, for heaven's sake, do it. What do you have to lose? I don't care if the plant, you know, the produce that you picked up at the grocery store wasn't organically grown. Wash it off good if you feel so inclined. But plant it in the ground. If you're concerned about the pesticides that may be on it or something, plant it in a pot. Once it grows out some, it will clean itself of those things over time. Those things don't last forever. And if you only must grow it in a pot just to get the seeds for the next generation and plant those in your yard, those seeds can completely live out their lives organically. It's fine. The one exception being if it's genetically modified, which means that it will forever be a genetically modified plant. Now, I'm going to leave it up to your judgment whether to do anything with genetically modified organisms. But the point is you can do a lot more than you think you can. So with that, I'm Charles Hathaway, and thanks again for listening to another episode of Wild Tales.